I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Baby talk. The government says the U.S. fertility rate has reached another record low. We have a report and reaction. And lighting the way. Pro-lifers in Finland address a burning issue. We'll explain. Planned Parenthood increased its abortions, received more taxpayer dollars, and saw a decrease in health services last year. The findings are from the abortion giant's recently released annual report. Planned Parenthood says it performed a record number of abortions last year. It also received more than $838 million in taxpayer funds, an increase from 8% from the previous year. The annual report acknowledges Planned Parenthood performed fewer cancer screenings, pap smears, and other health services. And according to analysis from Professor Michael New, Planned Parenthood performed 434,450 abortions last year. This is an increase of 5% and a new record. Michael New also finds that over the past 10 years, the number of cancer screenings performed by Planned Parenthood has decreased by more than 42%, and abortions have increased by more than 34%. This comes amid a new government report that says last year the U.S. fertility rate reached a record low. The findings are from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They say the fertility rate dropped to 53.1 births per 1,000 women ages 15 to 44. That is a drop of 23% since its 2007 peak. The most notable decline came in teenage births, which reached a historic low. Emma Waters from the Heritage Foundation says there are several reasons for the overall decrease, which include, quote, anti-life technologies like abortion, economic pressures, and cultural movements such as girl boss feminism. The findings also say U.S. births declined slightly in 2025. There were more than 3,606,000 births last year. That's down from more than 3,628,000 in 2024. For more, we turn to Philip Lawler, author, former pro-life candidate for the U.S. Senate in Massachusetts, and founder of Catholic World News. He is also the father of seven children with nearly two dozen grandchildren. Phil, does the record low in the U.S. fertility rate surprise you?
No, it's not much of a surprise because we've all seen it coming. It's disturbing, though. And disturbing on several different levels. I mean, practical and economical as well as spiritual. Having children is a sign of faith in the future, and it is a sort of guarantee of a future. And the lack of that faith is really troubling. It tells us something unsettling about our society.
I think you're exactly right. Could you go into a little bit more detail about why the birth rate is so important and what a record low birth rate could mean for the future of the United States?
Well, put it simply in economic terms, and again, I don't know that economic terms that it should dominate our thought because the spiritual terms are more disturbing, but the spiritual implications, I mean, but we're getting older and as a society, and old people need the help of young people. Well, to put it in very simple terms, the social security system is not solvent and can only be solvent if there are a lot of young people working. And you can reach a critical mass or a sort of negative version of critical mass where it's too late to reproduce at a level that will keep up the population. And we're at that level now. And the only reason that our population continues to grow is immigration. And of course, that's another contentious issue. But my point being, we as a society are not continuing ourselves. We're not providing for our own future. We're not looking to the future.
Now, how do the fertility numbers from the United States measure up with other countries?
That's even more disturbing. We're doing relatively well. Europe is in decline, further in decline than we are. China is in precipitous decline. China, which enforced that brutal one-child policy for years is now trying desperately to convince people to have more than one child. And curiously enough, not very successfully. People no longer want to have a lot of children. So all over the world, this is a problem for all. Curiously enough, it's a problem for the most economically advanced societies. Poor countries are still, as a general rule, reproducing. But wealthy countries are not.
And I think that's an interesting point that you point out, that once the trend starts, it's kind of hard to turn back the dial. If you could advise the current administration on this topic, what would you tell them?
First of all, birth control is one of America's biggest, the American government's biggest exports. We should stop it. We should stop all of our efforts to cut down, to encourage population control. You know, the whole population control myth needs to be addressed. We need to tell the world that the greatest source of human wealth is the human spirit. We need to encourage the realistic perception, the realistic understanding that the greatest resource that we have, it's not some natural mineral or something, it is the human spirit. Human creativity is what powers the world's economy, makes the world happy, enriches our lives, and human spirit only comes from human. So we need humans. We need to have that approach. What we don't need is a host of government incentives to delay marriage, to delay childbearing, to get your education, particularly for women, get educated, stay in school until you're in your late 30s and your fertility is already in decline. Postpone having babies because you think, well, I can always do that later, which can be a trap. You can be wrong. Maybe you can't have babies later. There are all sorts of different societal pressures against having children. And I think if young couples in love were left to their own devices, they would have children.
Now, Phil, we mentioned earlier that you are a grandfather. Could you share one practical story of what having your grandchildren means to you?
Well, I tell people that grandchildren keep you young even as they make you old. I mean, you feel old trying to chase around a three-year-old when you're as old as I am, and trying to keep up with all of their news. But it's such a delight. I mean, the highlight of my years comes on those increasingly rare occasions when we get the whole clan together, and it's a madhouse, but it's just so delightful.
Amen. Now, quickly, one other story we are following is the rise of assisted suicide in Canada. Last month, you discovered something about the assisted suicide program in Ontario, Canada. Could you share what that was?
Yes. People always complain about how inefficient the government is, and usually governments are very inefficient. But in Ontario, I found out if you want assisted suicide, the government will provide same-day service. And that's so frightening to think who hasn't had a bad day? Mm. You have a really bad day and you say, maybe I want to end it all. You might not have time to think again. And the government is that anxious to provide that service, putting you out of life. If only it were equally anxious to encourage people introducing new life.
Amen. Amen. Well, Phil, it's been a pleasure to have you here. And thank you for drawing that theme that what matters most is human life. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Pope Leo XIV is in the middle of his highly anticipated trip to Africa. And amid his busy schedule, the Holy Father found time in Algeria to visit a home for the elderly run by the Little Sisters of the Poor. The Holy Father met with the sisters, staff, and 40 residents. The community serves elderly people in need, including many Muslims, offering them dignity and friendship regardless of faith. Pope Leo told the crowd, "God dwells in the home," adding, "Wherever there is love and service, God is there too." The Holy Father will visit four countries during his 11-day trip. A baby born more than 4 months early last summer in Australia is home with her parents and thriving. Baby Stevie was born at 22 weeks and 2 days. Her mother unknowingly caught an infection that caused her to go into labor while on vacation. Baby Stevie is the youngest premature baby ever born in Australia. After a handful of health issues, she was released from the hospital around Christmas last year. Her parents say baby Stevie is doing just fine. In the United States each year, 1 million parents will lose a child to miscarriage. Others will experience a different early pregnancy loss. Over half will seek medical help from medical staff who have not been adequately trained to address the emotional toll and grief. The Institute of Reproductive Grief Care is addressing this issue. The organization provides evidence-based education and resources to healthcare professionals, enabling them to deliver compassionate grief care, reduce emotional trauma, and improve maternal mental health. For more, we turn to Dr. Michaeline Friedenberg, President and CEO of the Institute of Reproductive Grief Care. She is the author of several books, an assistant clinical professor at Creighton University, and has more than 25 years of experience as a nonprofit executive. Michaeline, to start, what is reproductive grief and how many men and women does it impact?
Right. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on and being able to bring to light, which is often a really hidden grief and loss that people feel. So there's about 2.4 million reproductive losses that occur every year in the United States. And of course, that impacts not just the person who's losing the pregnancy, but also their partner, family members, and friends.
Oh, and in your work, you found that most ER teams are not prepared to help patients with reproductive loss. Why is that the case?
Yeah, even though there's about 900,000 emergency department visits for early pregnancy loss concerns, there isn't education. So typically in a nursing program or in medical school, there isn't talk about the emotional aspects, the emotional emergency that often is occurring. And then that, as you can imagine, creates a lot of anxiety and fear for providers. They don't want to make it worse. They don't want to say the wrong thing. And then they also encounter typically a system that doesn't have policies and procedures in place that would even allow them to fully provide the compassionate reproductive grief care.
Wow. And can you give us an example of how that ends up playing out at a doctor's visit, impacting both the patient? And I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that it also makes the providers themselves uncomfortable.
Yes, absolutely. So I could think of you're going to the emergency department, right? So perhaps there's hemorrhaging or pain and you're afraid, you don't know what's happening. You are often going to be sitting for sometimes hours alone in a waiting room. Once you even get back, you often are required to repeat what's happening over and over and over again to each person that you encounter every time. That's creating trauma. And typically, your needs aren't being addressed, or maybe they confirm a miscarriage and they're providing you with clinical and physical instructions on what to do, as opposed to saying things like, "I am so sorry for your loss." And inquiring about their spiritual, religious preferences, or how do we involve your partner? Can we have someone here to support you?
Now, how does the Institute of Reproductive Grief Care address this?
Yeah, so we actually have a comprehensive program for emergency departments. So I mentioned those policies and procedures. We actually start there and work with their leadership on what we would need to do to change. To make sure that this compassionate care could be utilized. We then go through stages of education for multidisciplinary teams. So this could be from transport to registration, all the way through discharge, so that each person is attending to that individual, making sure that there is a way to memorialize the loss. There's a dignified way to retrieve remains. And we work long term with their leadership in what we call best practice coaching. And for those who actually successfully implement the program and change their practices, they actually will earn a compassionate care designation.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, could you tell me a little bit about your reproductive grief screening tool?
Yes, yeah, thank you for asking about that. So I mentioned earlier the number of losses that occur every year, and we know through research that about 60% of both of those bereaved parents will experience symptoms of anxiety, depression, and PTSD within 2 years, and over half of them are at risk for a prolonged or complicated grief reaction, and yet there's no way to screen. Nobody's asking, and there isn't a screening tool. And so the Institute stepped into the gap with, we have partners that we work with throughout the country to actually develop and validate a 5-question screener. It's not quite ready yet. It's a very long process to do it, but it looks like we're about a year away from having that available. And we found through research that just asking those questions, so you're asking and you're acknowledging that in and of itself is healing and supportive, but also this allows us a tool that we can intervene earlier so that you don't have years of isolation and pain where you're suffering in silence.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, you mentioned you're about a year away. Are there any other developments we should be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, so we have amazing partners from San Diego State to Texas Children's Women's Pavilion to Indiana University, Indianapolis. Two of our main researchers are there, and that triggered quite a bit of interest from IU Health, who's very eager to use this tool. And we are delighted to be working with them to make that possible.
That's incredible. Now, what would you say to someone who is watching this interview and has experienced reproductive grief?
Yeah, I want you to know that you're not alone, and that we remember you and we remember your children with you, and there are support resources that are available for you.
That's beautiful. Well, Dr. Michaeline, thank you so much for just the incredible work that you're doing, reaching out to these parents and helping them through this grief.
Yeah, it's really a privilege to be able to do that, and I really appreciate again that you're bringing light to the subject.
If you or someone you know is in need of healing from miscarriage, please visit miscarriagehurts.com. For those who regret their abortion and would like to find healing, visit yourabortionexperience.org. Two college students launch an artificial intelligence platform that brings Catholic teaching to AI. Meet Acutis AI, developed by 21-year-old Peter Cooney, a student at the University of Dallas, and his 19-year-old brother, Thomas, a student at Baylor University. Their platform offers a search tool shaped by Catholic morality. It also helps parents monitor their children's chats, set time limits, and receive a notification when concerning topics are detected. Peter Cooney says while testing responses on ChatGPT, he asked its thoughts on abortion. He says ChatGPT affirmed abortion and added, quote, "You made the best decision you could." Cooney adds in part that artificial intelligence companies, quote, "try to be neutral, but at their core, they're not aligned with church teaching. And all the big platforms just have a small team of people who make all these moral decisions." Peter Cooney built the platform using the Catechism of the Catholic Church and other faith-based materials. He says he hopes Acutis AI will teach young people how to use artificial intelligence responsibly and give parents the guidance they need. A major victory in court for a Catholic pro-life advocate and father of seven. A new report says Mark Hauck, recently won a settlement of more than $1 million. His lawsuit stems from an early morning FBI raid at his Pennsylvania home in 2022. The Department of Justice accused Hawick of violating the FACE Act, a move that generated concern about then-Attorney General Merrick Garland's treatment of pro-life advocates. A jury later acquitted Hawick of the federal charges. This comes as the Department of Justice says the Biden administration weaponized federal law by selectively prosecuting pro-lifers under the FACE Act. The charges are part of a nearly 900-page report released this week. The study reviewed more than 700,000 internal records from the Biden administration. It says it found the DOJ under Merrick Garland coordinated with abortion rights groups to track peaceful pro-lifers. They also worked for harsher sentencing for pro-life defendants. And the report says in some cases, the Biden-era DOJ withheld evidence or tried to exclude jurors based on religion. Coming up, a bright idea. Pro-lifers in Finland find a unique way to honor the lives lost last year to abortion. Welcome back to EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan. More than 1,000 people took part in the 16th March for Life in Romania late last month. The rally was organized by Students for Life, with strong support from the Orthodox Church and the majority Orthodox country. The march was one of hundreds of pro-life events in the Month for Life, an initiative for the unborn in Romania and neighboring Moldova. In Finland, thousands of candles illuminated the steps of its parliament as pro-lifers there held a vigil commemorating children lost to abortion. The vigil was organized by Finland's Right to Life Association. It featured more than 8,000 candles in central Helsinki, one for each abortion performed in Finland in 2024. An event organizer says about 100 participants were invited to light candles. One pro-lifer says he hopes the candles make people stop and think about how many children are lost every year to abortion. Finally, tonight, Pope Leo XIV recently met with athletes from the 2026 Winter Olympics and Winter Paralympic Games. He says in an increasingly polarized and divided world, sports can be a place of encounter. The Holy Father says he was overjoyed to greet the athletes, and he even got to see some of the Olympic medals up close. Pope Leo says sports is a form of language filled with effort, participation, failures, and new beginnings. A two-time gold medalist says sports also prove that women do not have to sacrifice starting a family to succeed on the playing fields.
Don't choose between work or between family, but they also need to ask for help, you know, because I couldn't do this being both mom and athletes without help of my husband, of my family, you know, of my federation. So it's like really a teamwork, you know. What you learn from the sport is the teamwork that you also need to put in your family, in your work, you know, in your life. So yeah, they need to have the clear mind, to also don't have fear to ask for help.
Francesca Lola Brigidia won her gold medal a couple of years after giving birth to her son. And one of the Paralympians shared a message about never giving up.
No, you must never give up, because in everyday life, we're always likely to face challenges. We're always likely to face difficulties. But if we let ourselves go at the first difficulty, then everything becomes complicated.
That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTNnews.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.